Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Information Blocking Task Force meeting, perhaps the last. Of the task force members, we have Andy Trescott, Michael Adcock, Stephen Lane, Cheryl Turney, Sasha Termotz, Aaron Mary, Anil Jain, John Kansky, and Denny McComb. Did I miss anyone who's a task force member who's dialed in? Okay, with that, I will turn it over to our co-chairs, Michael and Andy, to get started.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for taking some time, especially for those of you who are on the West Coast as well. We shall move through what the work that's left ahead of us as expediently as possible. I do encourage everybody to say now exactly what's on your mind, because this will be, as outlined, the last formal route for us to meet as an information blocking task force, unless we are reconvened at some latter point. This is it, guys. And we will be roll call voting on the final recommendations so that we can take them through to HITAC beginning next week. So has anyone else got any comments before we crack on? Mike, do you want to say anything?
No, good morning, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you for all the hard work. I can't believe it's finally coming to an end. I don't believe it's an end yet. We will see. But it is hopefully the last task force meeting. And just wanted to thank, if you look at the documents and look at all it doesn't even reflect all the work that's been done, and it's a tremendous amount of work itself. So thank you to all the task force members, and specifically to Andy, my illustrious co-chair, for doing a lot of the heavy lifting on writing recommendations and getting down what everyone communicated during the task force meetings.
Thank you very much, sir. Let's congratulate everyone when we get to the end of the next 2 hours. Okay. We'll move on then to recommendation number one, which is around health information exchange. You'll see we've still got some discourse going on about what we actually want this to mean. And right now, there's still, a fair degree of flux around it. I have, Excel, can you bring over the recommendations now? That'd be great. You've all got your materials before this meeting. Oh, John Kansky, you've got your hand up already. Wow, we've got to the end of my introductory statement.
Finish your introductory statement. I was just trying to get ahead of the crowd.
Okay, fine. There has been lots of discourse over the last 3 or 4 days around this definition. I think that, actually, John, you get your thoughts in, because we know it is still in a state of flux, so you say what you need to say.
You want me to go?
Yeah, go.
Okay, sorry. So I guess there's two major things that I wanted to comment on. One is I understand that we're going back to the, dare I say, noun-verb version of the health information exchange definition. I've come to grips with that. I'm fine with that. I still think this definition is big and furry. I've quit fighting about that. I think there may be, some unintended consequences that will have to be discussed in the TEFCA task force of having a big furry definition. I'm not sure it's in any way problematic, but we need to discuss it. The thing that still hits me in the face that I don't know when this was introduced and I missed it is that I don't get how a product meets the definition of health information exchange. So I understand that there's an organization that can be a health information exchange and an activity that can be a health information exchange, but I would recommend striking the reference to a product that can enable health information exchange meeting the definition of health information exchange.
And that's a good point, John. And that was quite one of my concerns as we're drafting it up as well. I tell you what, I don't know whether, if I propose a redefinition, because I've got a lot of input over the last couple of days and for consideration now, if we say that a health information exchange or HIE means, here we go, any entity performing the access, exchange, transmittal, processing, handling, or other such use of electronic health information who is not considered a provider, Health Information Network, or Health IT Developer. Shall I repeat that?
Sure.
Okay. Any entity performing the access, exchange, transmittal, processing, handling, or other such use of electronic health information who is not considered a provider, health information network, or health IT developer.
So I see where you're going.
Why
go
would
ahead.
You take out health information network, though? That seems like there's going to be so much overlap.
That's where I was going.
Well, yeah, it's purely, I'm reflecting some of the opinions. It's kind of taking HIE and saying it's the catch-all for what sits outside the other actor definitions. And it might be that it's a very small suite of people who fall inside that definition. But it means that we avoid the protectionist approach which could exist if we inadvertently deliberately exclude the group.
So I think the end, if no one has their hand up, I think the end result is you catch, one, you're going to catch in that definition everyone we intend to catch. Two, it is no less furry or confusing in terms of people trying to figure out which category they fit. Although three, if it doesn't matter which category they fit, for example, HIE plus miscellaneous, which is what I heard you just say, or HIN, if there's no difference in the how you comply with the rules or what your penalties are, then it'll just be perceived as a head shake when people go to comply, but it won't be any harm.
I think there might be a difference in enforcement potentially. I think that might still be straightening out. ONC, if people want, Mr. Lipinski or Mr. Nee want to comment on that. What it does is it covers entities who do not create a network of entities to exchange, but actually provide an exchange service.
So Andy, just to jump in while people are thinking about that, I mean,
yeah.
I'm not sure I quite follow the enforcement question. I mean, what CURES, the only differentiation CURES makes in enforcement is between providers, you know, with the disincentives that are going to be identified, and then the three other groups, developers, networks, and exchanges, which can be subject to penalties up to $1 million. So, I mean, that's really the distinction that's made in enforcement.
Okay, that's fine. But you're right,
Andy,
John.
Andy, quick question is there, and this is, I don't have my hand up. I'm just curious. From that definition, I'm driving, so I'm not reading it. I'm listening to you. Would that exclude payers? Would that exclude other dimensions of the healthcare vertical that have been known to have some difficulty in exchanging information with folks?
I think it would include them, wouldn't it? I think it would include them because – go on.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, I think it would include a payer because it then says any entity, that performing the access, exchange, transmittal, processing, handling, or other such use of electronic health information. So that a payer would fall into that, who is not considered a provider, HIN, or health IT developer. Well, a payer is not considered a provider, health information network, or health IT developer. So we would be saying that a payer would implicate the rule, the regulations, under their inclusion as an actor under HIE. We would be saying that.
You would be, unless you force a behavior from the industry where payers start providing services like we're starting to see. So I'm just saying be careful with the nuance of that because there's a lot of folks that use data, obviously, as a source of monetary income, and so you can see some behavioral change occur if someone's a traditional payer, and I'm just going to pick on the payers for a second. I don't mean to. I am. Let's assume they start opening up offices, provider offices, primary care offices. Now suddenly you've changed the game on what they can be considered. So just something to think about.
No, that's a good point. Now, is that a – well, it's a recognized potential consequence. Is it one that we intend to happen?
What my personal druthers on this is that I like the, and I'm going to use John's word here, the big furry definition, because it allows flexibility for the rule to apply and for, you know, provider organizations like myself to make sure that the entire ecosystem is behaving. I'm just saying that you know that people are going to try to find wiggle rooms around this because, again, there's a lot of money made in the identified data. So that's all I'm saying.
Okay. So, okay.
And
I'll put this
point of operation. Yep. Can you please? I know you can't put it in the public chat, but could you please, or someone please, send me the link to the Google Doc that you're currently working on?
Oh, we're not looking at Google Doc. I'm looking at the letter transmittal, and I appreciate it'd be easier for people to see this on screen. Let me see if I can do that.
It's small.
Okay. I think my screen might be being shared now. Please shout at me if it's appearing.
Still pretty small. Oh, here you come.
No, that's
the one we want to see. Make it look like that. Perfect. That's better.
Okay. I can no longer see hands that are raised though, so you'll need to keep me honest.
Andy, I can see the hands that are raised. I'll let you know.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay, Cheryl. I'm looking for your input as a payer representative.
Yeah, I've been quiet, but I'm not sure that if this then applies to payers, then what does this mean? So within the Blue Cross Blue Shield franchise, we share data with one another. And so would this then apply to the data that we have to share within the association and the affiliates? Then how about the data that the clients request? That is, there is some of that data that we consider to be proprietary. I think that this is probably going to be problematic from a payer perspective.
Is it problematic or is it unexpected? Because my sense was there was a belief from most payers that they are included in the information blocking regulations.
Oh no, I hear that they are, but I don't know if they would be considered a health information exchange is what I'm saying. They're still an actor in the system. But I don't think everything they do makes them a health information exchange.
Well, I think we are kind of defining, at least within the context of information blocking, what we want the term a health information exchange to mean. What other actor would you consider that they would fall under?
Well, they're a covered entity. So they're already, regulated from that perspective.
But particular to information blocking and cures, which actor would a payer fall under out of the four that they have?
Yeah, I mean, this is the only one, obviously.
Okay, so as Mark pointed out, you know, with the exception of health IT developer, I think, and provider, the HIE and HIN are kind of yin and yang a little bit. I think the idea is with this drafting, from what I'm picking up from others on the committee as well, is this means that, you know, payers, for example, are included, and they expect to be included, but this just makes it clear.
Yes, I I understand that. I also know they're going to think it's problematic.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, because I think they believe there's some information that they exchange which should not be, you know, basically open to the public, which gets to the comment that was made already about the...
This is purely around defining the actor. This is not about saying what you do and what information. It's just about the actor.
No, I get that. That's why I'm being hesitant. Because I don't see anywhere else that they would belong. But I do also see that there are, you know, some... pretty much all of them are going to feel as though there's some information that they have that shouldn't have to be shared. And so that becomes the topic of discussion.
And I think that is taken care of with the exceptions, is it not?
Right. It should be.
Yeah. And also, the onus is on us around the definition of electronic health information, because this whole actor inclusion is based around electronic health information. We need to make sure that electronic health information, which will be the next topic of discussion, provides the right scoping.
So I mean, I accept this is where we've put it right along, and this is what I've been communicating, but I do continue to get points made that this would be problematic, and I get that too. So I think we should just move on.
Okay, well, we're going to move on because we're going to... Has anyone got any more comment? And if not, we're going to call this to a vote for task force. Okay? Has anyone else got any comment on this? Okay. I'm happy to call it to the vote. So those in favour of making this recommendation... Hello? Was that Neil coming off mute to either confirm or deny? Okay. Those in favour of making this our recommendation for the definition of health information exchange to HITACH, for them to consider, please say aye.
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 Are we voting on what you read out, Andy, or what's in the document?
You're voting on what I read out and what's on screen right now. I shall read it out once more. Okay. Health Information Exchange, or HIE, means any entity performing the access, exchange, transmittal, processing, handling, or other such use of electronic health information who is not considered a provider, health information network, or health IT developer. Those in favour, please say aye once more.
Aye.
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 Those against, please say nay. Those abstaining, please say abstain.
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 Okay. So that's passed with two abstentions. We're going to move forward now to the definition of electronic health information. And there were some changes to this that came through very late, which we put in here for discussion. Around the additional third piece that we put in around electronic information which can reasonably be used to inform care decisions, including by the patient, including pricing information which may or may not be identifiable. Now, this has caused considerable lighting up of my email box over the last couple of days, and I'll try and reflect some of those sentiments right now.
I'm raising my hand because I have an issue with the including pricing information, which may or may not be identifiable. Because first of all, that doesn't really clarify the point, I think, that was trying to be made. But secondly, it makes it too open and too broad, and it really needs to be related to the individual.
And I think that was one of the comments which I was about to reflect. So, Cheryl, what do we think the intent here is of this inclusion? What are we trying to achieve?
I think we're trying to achieve providing information that people can make decisions with, and having information that's so broad that may or may not be identifiable. What does that even mean? Identifiable to what? The data is supposed to be related to the patient or the case of the, care of that individual. So somehow it has to be related to that, which is why
okay.
I say that statement isn't clear. And so I can't endorse that and would strongly say we have to change it.
So a comment. One is, I think for clarity, we should say individually identifiable or identifiable to the individual. And I think the idea, Cheryl, just, again, not specifically promoting it, but I think the idea is that we might be talking about general pricing for the public. Or we might be talking about pricing data that has been specified to an individual's, situation. I think that's what we're talking about. Again, I think it's reasonable to be considered. I think certainly, individually specified or individually identifiable data. It's interesting because identifiable is odd. It sort of suggests that from that pricing data, you can identify who the patient is, which isn't really the point here. That the point is that the patient, the data has been specified to the individual.
Which may or may not be specific to the individual.
I thought that the intent was it needed to be related to the condition for the individual. So if in the future you think you need to have a knee operation, you should know how much that's going to cost you. So it would be the pricing that individual would experience in the future for that particular type of condition.
I'm wordsmithing on the fly. Anybody else, please help me here.
I got my hand up.
I can't see that. Mr. Adcock, please police the handing.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. It's John. Unless I'm misinterpreting the conversation, I feel unusually strong about this point because it feels like we spent a collective hour on three different calls talking about this. And I thought we came to, if not consensus, a decision that we were not going to include pricing that was not identifiable, pricing information that was not. Clearly, we want price transparency, clearly pricing information that is identifiable to the patient, yes, but I thought we specifically decided not to go here.
Anil, this is Anil. I thought the exact same thing, which is what I was going to say when I raised my hand. I mean, I think we're going back to something that we've already decided, and then there's some very compelling reasons why we would want to promote it. But there's an RFI out, and we need to make sure that when we think about electronic health information, it could be implementable. Making it broad so that it doesn't include identifiable information around pricing could be an implementation nightmare. So I think we should limit the definition to identifiable information regarding price, present, past, present, and future, and we should let the RFI process play out and then come back to this later if we need to.
Okay, so taking
Andy? Sorry, it's Val. I can't raise my hand because I'm on the road, but I do agree. I feel like we've talked about this a number of times, and I'm not quite sure why we're sort of going at it one more time again.
Because we want to build a majority consensus and vote on this, and it's okay. I must confess, on my personal basis, I struggle with the term identifiable. Because I think it can mean many different things when it comes to data in general. I think I'm reflecting the sentiment that actually we want information to be attributable to the individual. Is that fair? We don't want this open-ended. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I think that's what we all agreed previously. We wanted it attributed to the individual.
Okay. So if those of you that are on screen can see the current drafting I've got in here, and I will read this out for those of you who are in transit. Electronic information. Yep. Go ahead.
I just wanted to note that you saw Denise's email about the definition before you move forward on voting.
I did, and I've incorporated her sentiments in the middle section of this definition.
Okay, great. I just wanted to make sure okay. they were... Okay.
Yeah, I saw that. So, electronic information which can reasonably be used to inform care decisions by a provider or patient, including pricing information which can be attributable to an individual patient.
And Andy, are you deliberately trying to avoid the use of the word identified or identifiable?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because again, as I said, it doesn't really identify the patient. It's derived from characteristics of the patient, but there's nothing about the pricing information that it
is identifiable. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, this is Anil. I don't want to overcomplicate things, but why are we limiting using to inform care decisions? What if the decision is about reimbursement or payment? I'm missing something there.
This is the third part of this. So the things around payments is already taken care of earlier on. This was specific information. This is a specific broadening, which was, I think, we had a consensus on.
We don't need to waste time on that then.
This is Cheryl. This is because it was part of what is electronic health information. That's why. It's the third part of that.
Got it. Okay.
So I'll read it out again. Electronic information which can be reasonably be used. Sorry, I'll start again. Part three. Electronic information which can reasonably be used to inform care decisions by a provider or patient, including pricing information which can be attributable to an individual patient.
I'm good with that, Andy.
Okay. Anybody else for any discussion on this?
It's fine. I think it's fine. I'm not sure why we're changing the word identifiable, which is used in multiple places in the document, to attributable. But again, it's not a big deal.
It's a good point. I must admit, I'm not with your chair hat on, with my personal hat on. What is it about? Is it the data that's identifiable? Is it the patient that's identifiable? I struggle in this sentence, but I think what we actually mean is the pricing information which can be attributed to that individual over there for whatever reason. Whether or not that individual is identifiable, whether they're uniquely or otherwise, it's just, I think we mean something slightly different here.
Okay.
I think. Unless there's a consensus that actually identifiable is a better word. If so, say now or forever.
I like the changes you've made.
Okay. We've made. Okay, so I'm going to put this to a vote if there's no more discussion. So all those in favour of modifying this recommendation so that part three is electronic information which can reasonably be used to inform care decisions by a provider or patient, including pricing information which can be attributable to an individual patient, say aye.
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 Those against, please say nay. And those abstaining, please say abstain. Okay, thank you. That's a unanimous carrying through. Hey, Cheryl.
Question, is Cynthia on?
Cynthia is on. I'm not sure she's actively contributing, but she's on the call. And I've tried to reflect her feedback and sentiment as well as we've gone through this discussion. We have reflected Cynthia's minority opinion in the transmittal letter. And you can all read that. She's modified that as well. Okay. Recommendation 5. This was the price information request for comment and request for information. So we've updated the text in here just to recognize our position and what we were asked to do. So if you guys have read this material already, has anyone got any comment on that, on the markup that we put in there?
Andy, it's John again, and I read the paragraph that had been inserted that shows up on my PC in blue. We got a different markups, and I was a little concerned based on my reading, but I want to make sure I'm not confused. Yeah, that's the paragraph right there. Task force notes the proposed definition, along with a recommendation for amendment, provides for an expansive set of IHAB which could include information on an individual insurance eligibility or benefits, billing health services, payment information for services to be. Is this different than what we just struck? I guess is my. This seemed to be in support of what we just took out.
I don't think it is, because these are based around an individual's health insurance eligibility and benefits. That's attributable to the individual. Billing for healthcare services, that's attributable to individual. Payment information for surgery provided, that's in the first part of the definition of EHI, to be provided or already provided, which may include price information. So it should be aligned.
So what is the point of saying that, I'm sorry, let me, yeah, go ahead.
That's all you, man.
Okay, so the next sentence then, why do we need to say that the task force notes the availability of individually specific and generalized price information enables patients to shop? I guess that's true. Is that making a point? I guess I don't have a problem with saying that.
This is just in a request for comment and request for information.
Okay, got it.
Okay, because individually specific and generalized price information, that's still useful and attributable to the individual. Generalized price information is still useful and attributable to the individual.
I'm okay.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Yeah, Andy, just a short comment. The last sentence that I'm seeing in red,
everyone's computer does this in different colors.
Allows the patients to shop for and make decisions. I would simply add the word informed before decisions.
I think that's helpful. I will correct the font sizes as well.
I'm sorry, Andy. I'm still getting a bit of a lapse here. I don't understand how this is different than, I mean, this is not the same as what we just talked about. So if we have generalized price information as part of EHI, I don't know how that's consistent with what we just discussed a few minutes back.
Yeah, this does not include it as part of EHI. All it does is it says that
it's down here. No. It says there. It says that it should be included in the scope of EHI as per our recommendations. This refers back to our EHI recommendation. So we should
take out generalized. You're right.
Yes. And, if we really wanted to think about generalized price information, maybe we put a sentence saying that we should ask for further input from the community about how generalized price information should be incorporated. But that, let's not make it part of our EHI definition.
So, yeah, in the – we have later on in this section, we actually say, look, there should be a new task force to go through this and consider it. So I think maybe we should actually insert that in here as a clear recommendation. Generalized price information can be made readily accessible and available to patients to.
Yes, I like that.
And I think it's important to acknowledge that none of us is against the sharing of generalized pricing information. You know, it's just that
right.
It doesn't belong here. That's all.
Our first statement here is the task force profoundly agrees that price transparency is a desirable goal that is achievable. That's our first statement.
Yep, I like that.
Okay. And then we've got this last paragraph, which was also in markup since the last draft of this. The RVTF notes that existing entities within the healthcare ecosystem have access to pricing information which could be utilized by patients to make informed decisions about the nature and location of their care. Those entities should be obliged to share that information, and our recommended amendment to the definition of electronic health information is designed to promote the sharing of that information by placing a non-sharing boundary and placing non-sharing within the boundary of information blocking. I don't think that's in any kind of quibble, is it?
This is Anil, just wordsmithing here. I mean, we've defined EHI so many times, I think just put EHI instead of spelling it all the way out. It seems like the paragraph's a little bit out of place, but it's fine.
Well, this is the whole RFI, RFC.
Right. I think that's fine. I mean, it says pretty much what we've already said above, so it's all good. Summarizes it.
Yes, actually the bit that's different is about we say those entities should be obliged. So it is a slight finessing.
Okay.
Okay, guys. We've included that within the recommendation for the mandate and charge of this new task force to discuss how generalized price information can be made readily accessible and available to patients and providers to inform care decisions. That is that, and we've wordsmithed a little bit these above points as well. I'm not going to read them out again, but for recommendation 5 around price information requests for comment and requests for information, those in favor of our amendments, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, Andy, I'm sorry, this is Anil. Can I make one quick suggestion for wording? You have providers and patients. What about those who are actually paying for care, like employers? Why wouldn't
that's
they
a
all
very, that's a very good point, yep.
Okay.
So, where would that go in here?
Purchasers, I think, is the word.
Yes.
Broader than employers.
I like
okay.
that.
Okay. Help me here. Whereabouts in these three paragraphs?
It was right where you just were at, where it said patients and providers. It was if you go further down.
There.
Further down, right there. And so purchasers, or patients, providers, and purchasers. I think that would solve it. I like it.
I think it would need to include payers too. Because quite honestly, they're looking for us to provide information. We don't have all the prices on out-of-network providers or who even is out-of-network in all cases.
Yep.
So,
good point.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
So that now says how generalized price information can be made readily accessible and available to patients, providers, purchasers, payers, and other relevant stakeholders to inform care decisions.
There you go.
Good.
With the catch-all at the end.
Calling in payers, of course, does raise the concern about what should be or what would be appropriate to claim as, you know, IP or, you know, private. You know, I think the idea that payers are somehow, that their prices are part of their secret sauce, I think might be a concern. But with you supporting this, Cheryl, I don't have any trouble pushing it forward, but I think some people are going to raise an eyebrow at that.
Well, bear in mind, guys, that this is a recommendation for consideration of the new task force. We're not saying this should happen. We're saying the new task force should think about it. and consider.
Right. And I mean,
and the exceptions are there.
Even payers are working on how to make the general information more available when it comes to pricing. So, you know, although you, as I stated before, the providers on this call seem to be very readily able and willing to share data, that's not our experience with many of the providers we deal with. So I just think what the way we have it will work for everyone.
Cool. Okay, guys. I'll call this one to vote. Have we got any more discussion? Okay. Back to vote on these proposed amendments to Recommendation 5. Those in favour, please say aye.
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 Those against, please say nay. Those abstentions, please say abstain. Passed unanimously. Thank you very much. Let's move on. Okay. Health IT developer certified health IT. We've added this paragraph to try and capture the sentiment that the problem we've got is that 21st Century Cures has a definition of health IT developer, and then it has enforcement activity to be taken about developers of certified health IT. And that is a slight mismatch, which might be deliberate, it might be inadvertent. One of the potential outcomes is that we could inadvertently create a group of IT developers producing health IT that actively information blocks because they're not covered by the regulations. Whether or not there's enforcement associated with that, and I think that's for ONC to work through, but you could create this privileged group that doesn't actually have to comply. And that, I think, is the last thing we want to achieve, which is allowing some developers of health IT to information block. And you know, the worst thing that could happen would then be those people use that software as a provider, and then they are found to be implicating information blocking because they're using software that information blocks, if that makes sense.
John has his hand up.
Oh, John, go ahead. Help me here, man.
Yeah, no, I think I want to characterize this, and you tell me if I'm on the right path. This is further clarification and support for the position that we've taken on a recommendation that HIT developers should include even those that do not have certified products, right? This is additional clarification and support for that recommendation. Is that true?
That's the intent, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with it.
Stephen Lane has his hand up.
Mr. Lane.
In the very first line, I would replace the word and with or.
Where's that, sorry?
First line. First line of the paragraph.
Good point. Because the bottom line is, we want to have products which are beneficial to patients. We really want that. And we don't want those products to then information block.
So, Andy, this is Anil. I completely agree with what is being written here, I mean, what's being said here, and it's consistent with our prior discussions. But every time I read it, it seems a little wordy and hard to understand. And maybe there could be a way to make it more concise. But, you know, if the vote is that this is what we send to the HITECH, I'm good with it. I just think that it is a lot of words for what we're trying to say. We're basically saying, look, we want to promote innovation, and we want to ensure that there is no second track for innovators to circumvent the information blocking rules. That's what we're trying to say here, right?
Yeah.
John?
Yeah, I tend to agree with Anil that once I read this and understood what it said, I'm like, oh yeah, okay. I understand your thinking on this, Andy, or whoever contributed this text. I just think what we're really saying is that IT health IT developers that are not required to comply with this are given a safe harbor that is antithetical to the point of the regulation.
Yes, that's the point. I'm rewording this a little bit on the fly to try and make it more positive. I think all of you are now on screen. Can you read what the markup is and see if you agree? I'm trying to make it more accessible as well and less very long sentence. You'd think a lawyer had been involved in it, wouldn't you? So, the task force is concerned with promoting innovation and preventing barriers for entry for products that may have important benefits to patients. Period. The task force is also mindful that by limiting the applicability of the regulation to only developers of certified health IT, there might be the unintended consequences of encouraging developers to not comply with the regulation, which could encourage information blocking practices amongst those non-regulated vendors. Period. Is that clear? I'll take that as a yes. This, coupled with a movement towards self-developers and operators of healthcare-related services, could create a second track of non-compliant actors being detrimental to the integrated patient care and transparency we desire to foster and promote. Has anyone got any more comments on those as it stands drafted? And I'm also minded with the approved recommendation change around health information exchange, those organizations who might develop IT and then operate it as a single platform could actually be taken inside that ACTA provision as well.
Hey, Andy, this may be because I speak American and not English. I don't know. the fourth word right out of the gate, being concerned with, I think we're really trying to say, that we're in favor of promoting innovation, right? Thank you.
The task force wishes to promote innovation and prevent barriers. Good thing.
I'm good.
Me too.
You know, it's been hard for me to put Z's in words and stuff like that still. American English. Okay.
We all appreciate your forbearance there.
the internal dichotomy I go through in every document, yeah. Okay. What recommendation are we under right now? Ooh. Okay, so the health developer of certified health IT and our comments outlined in that. Oh, I'll go back to the right section here. There we go. Okay. As on screen right now, and it's in our precursor ahead of our recommendation, just a bit more explanatory text. Those in favor of this update to the transmittal letter, please say aye.
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 Those against, please say nay. And those abstaining, please say abstain. Okay, so that passed. Okay, recommendation 7, which is inside the practices that may implicate the information blocking provision. So this is obviously seeking some comment from us around what we think might implicate information blocking. And the first area we'd outlined was that whilst we have some definitions of actors as per peers, it's the people who are entities who are processing, accessing, exchanging, or using electronic health information we believe they should implicate. And whilst our update to health information exchange has assisted in including them right now, we have this recommendation 7, and there is some slight rewording and markup in here, just to say the definitions of actors is a necessary distinction for the purpose of identifying sanctions that can be levied, okay, and is the original intent of Congress. We feel that, with regards to information blocking, consideration should also be given to the nature of the information potentially being blocked.
And, hey,
are we
Andy,
really talking about the type of the information? Nature seems fairly vague to me.
Well, this was an approved statement before. We can change it. We have approved this previously. Sure. So what was your suggestion, Stephen?
Hi.
And this is Mark. I just wanted to say, you know, this is a fine recommendation, but I do think that I don't know that there's anything in the rule that says we're not, because, you know, the definition of information blocking is interference with the access, exchange, or use of electronic health information. And we talked about that we'll be looking at both the interference, whether there's access, exchange, and use involved, and whether it falls into the category of EHI. So we are looking at the type of information. So I'm not sure. I totally understand this one.
Yeah.
The sense of it was only that what we didn't want to have happen was that we recognized an entity as information blocking, but they didn't fall into any of the definitions of an actor, and therefore it was okay.
Yeah, if that's what we mean, we should say that.
Okay.
Just trying to make sure that payers and pure consumer technology vendors who are information blocking.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Morning, Arian, by the way.
It is morning.
Help me with the wordsmithing on this one, guys. Or not.
I'm Andy, this is Anil. I'm trying to understand what we're saying here, and I'm struggling to understand what if we were concerned that someone who's information blocking, who's not an actor, I'm reading this on the fly again.
That's fine.
Concerned that an entity who is considered an actor could be information blocking and not be implicated through non-inclusion as an actor. I don't understand what we're saying there. Sorry.
I was wordsmithing on the fly. The task force concerned that an entity who is not considered an actor could be information blocking and not be implicated to non-inclusion as an actor.
I don't really understand that. Andy.
Yes, yes. Let's start again.
From ONC's perspective, I mean, isn't the whole exercise we've been doing to identify those four actors and define them? So we're just saying that anyone else could be caught up even if they're not defined as an actor?
Well, I actually think this recommendation, part of me actually thinks we could almost nullify this one because of the definition we now have of health information exchange. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think if we can do without this, I think it's clearer. It's less confusing to not have that in there. Hey, and I apologize if this was. I put this in the chat box a while ago.
Oh, sorry, I can't see that.
Okay. Well, no worries. No, I'm just making a positive point. I didn't know if it was discussed and I missed it, but the recommendation that we approved on the HIE definition has the additional benefit of something that had been bothering me, which is that all the providers that might also meet the definition of an HIE are now carved out of the definition of an HIE because they meet the definition of a provider, and I think that's a great clarification.
Yeah, well, I think
that was a huge backtrack. Sorry.
It was channeling the inner Kansky as that was started.
You can have it.
No. It was. I went back through notes as I was drafting that, and that was one of the comments you'd made earlier. Okay. So recommendation 7, I've removed on the basis that because of our recommendation we made on health information exchange, this one isn't actually required as a recommendation. I think the comment we've made around practices is still valid, and we can leave that. Is that okay with people? Okay, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour of removing recommendation 7, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, please say nay. And those abstaining, please abstain. Awesomeness, unanimously carried. I'm not going to go through these minor wordsmiths. They are minor. Okay. Recommendation 9, this last bullet point update, just brings it into line with our health information exchange definition we've done above. So we're saying that the parties implicated by the information blocking provision should be a provider, a health information network or a health information exchange, a health information technology developer, or any other party who is using information technology to access, exchange, or use EHI to provide information technology services or information technology.
Yeah, Andy, this one kind of confuses me a little bit as well. This is Mark. Because isn't it just kind of reiterating your definition for the four actors?
Yeah, well, the point is that if ONC doesn't take on board our recommendation around health information exchange, then this will be needed.
Okay.
That makes sense?
I guess. I mean, thinking. Yeah. Go ahead, Neil.
No, I was just going to say, it seems like, Andy, what you're saying is that what our task force is recommending is either ONC adopt our prior recommendation or they adopt this recommendation, but not both, because it'll be quite redundant. Is that what you're saying?
It'll be duplicative. Yeah.
Is
that clear, maybe? Like that point?
Sorry, say that again? Sorry, what was the point?
Anil, did you want to say something? Sorry, I think I interrupted.
No, that wasn't me. Whoever was just speaking a second ago. I was making the point earlier about, you know, either you pick that one recommendation or you pick this recommendation, but not both. I would be in favor of the other recommendation and take this one out so that it's not confusing. Go ahead.
Yeah, all I was saying was that I think I agree with what you're saying. Either take it out or just make it clearer that this is like option B, or it's not in addition to the other recommendation.
I tend to agree.
Is it recommendation 1? How about that? That work?
Yeah, but wouldn't that apply for all of the bullets?
I don't think so. This is just around assigning party definitions to the actors.
Right, so wasn't that the whole point of the conversation about the definitions for the four actors, though? Like, isn't that essentially what you all were doing?
Yeah, but not, I don't think quite the same way. So, yeah, this is us saying we think there's confusion, potential for confusion about what bucket people fall into. Okay? We believe that one of the intentions of cures is this sentence doesn't make sense. Is that too far?
I guess to restate my what I'm confused about is that I think what you're saying here is that these are the four groups that should be covered, but you're not providing the same definitions as you did when defining those actors. So it's just a bit confusing to me what the point is.
Yeah, and to me, if we're going to, we should reference back to the way we defined it previously and not restate it.
That's a good point. We could take this out. I want to make sure we don't lose something as we take it out. Yeah, because we haven't been asked to define provider. We've only been asked to confirm We could remove completely. Okay. What's the consensus of the group? Is the consensus of the group that we remove this recommendation completely, or that we wordsmith it into alignment with the previous recommendations?
Well, this is Anil. I would suggest we remove it.
Anybody object to removing it?
No objection.
No objection. We can just say we removed it because it was redundant.
Yep. Oh, what's going on there? Okay. Recommendation 10, which was trying to give some greater specificity as to the real world organizational types who could potentially be fall into. We need to change this to categories of actors because we've removed the previous one. Can't type this one. I need caffeine. Okay. There was some markup to the last one here. So retailers who provide patient information services through IoT type devices and services from connected consumer devices. There's just a markup to try and make that clearer around the emerging group of organizations who use groups of IoT, whether they're medical IoT or whether they're consumer IoT devices, and that they would be implicated because they provide patient information services, not because they're selling devices.
Can I? This is Anil. I'm struggling with the word valuable. I see it in a few different bullets. The word valuable just seems out of place. I think what we've it's simply that this should be considered EHI. Once you've considered EHI, then it fits into all the other definitions. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. And the same thing with the pharmacy one too. I think we don't want to give anyone the impression that it's because it's valuable that we're suggesting. Yeah.
Do we need this pharmacy bullet? I don't understand why we need a pharmacy bullet. Isn't it already covered by the provider?
No, they consider themselves not providers.
They are providers.
Well, I know they are, but they consider themselves.
No. They're providers according to the definition that's provided under the rule.
Not as a retail pharmacy. A pharmacy is, but not a retail pharmacy. There's a difference.
Say what?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, this is the deal. I've heard the same thing, but I'm no expert, but I've heard the exact same thing as what Andy just said as well. I'm hearing it from people who operate retail pharmacies, by the way.
Yes.
So that may be a little biased.
Well, no, it's totally, but they have received solid legal opinion from their internal counsels and from their regulatory bodies telling them they are not considered providers in the same way. Could say, Arian, it doesn't hurt to say it, does it?
No, it does, because you could be presuming that they aren't.
But these are just examples of organization types who could fall into the various categories of actors.
Hmm.
It's not exhaustive, and it's not exclusive. Are you still considering this point, or are you?
I'm clicking through Cornell Law to try to find the definition and understand why anybody in retail pharmacy would claim that they're not a provider.
And while Arian's looking, just a plug, ONC, for some of our resources, on the NPRM website, we put together a useful table that picks apart who are the entities that are defined as healthcare providers. And I can send around that link, but that might be helpful for folks.
Yeah, the comment I've heard a lot of the time is that when the term pharmacy is used, what that means is an in-hospital pharmacy who is supplying medications across acute patient settings. A retail pharmacy is not included in that definition. And I've heard this time and time again. Neil, you heard it too. This came from another member of the task force originally. So.
And for those online, I just added the PDF link to the chat box if you want to take a look.
Mark, what page did you want us to look at in that document you sent over?
I guess I wasn't trying to take a position on the retail pharmacy. I was just saying, you know, more for future reference when you're thinking about.
Got it. Okay.
This might be
sure. Helpful. Okay.
Yeah, does not hurt to clarify that we should probably note that they presumably are already included as pharmacies under the definitions.
Is that a presumption or is that we know that retail pharmacies are explicitly called out?
Well, it turns out, this is Anil. I just read the first slide, second slide of the deck, that the link that Mark sent over, and it does say that a pharmacy is considered a healthcare provider. But the word retail is not in front of it, and I think it does help for us to get that clarified by putting this in there.
Yeah, I would think pharmacy is a more inclusive term.
I would agree.
But the definition of provider that's linked to is incredibly broad and expansive.
Exactly, yeah.
I think that's why retail pharmacy has elected to interpret it, saying it's very broad and expansive. They mean in-hospital pharmacy. They don't mean us retailers.
Do you bill via Part D?
Oh, I'm not arguing the fact, Aaron. I believe they are. I heard this from at least three large retail pharmacy organizations.
Yeah, I think there was an argument back in the day. We should probably just move on, but I think there was an argument back in the day when you only billed through Part A and Part B that you couldn't include pharmacy. But once you establish Part D, it's hard for anybody to claim that they're not.
Well, I'll tell you what, for information blocking, we think the retail pharmacy should be included, correct? Or the
yes.
task force people. So.
Yeah, I just would make sure that we state that we believe. We believe that they're already included under the definition.
Do we believe that insurance companies who can curate medical histories, do we believe that they're already covered?
We do not believe that they're already covered.
Okay. You're taking the word valuable out. I should just leave that. We recognise that some of these organisation types could be considered already covered by the regulation. Oof. No, that doesn't make sense.
Andy, just a suggestion. Could you just clarify regarding retail pharmacy?
Retail pharmacy. Yeah, I would clarify regarding retail pharmacy that... just make the assertion that the task force believes that they're already covered under the definition provided.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, I'm not trying to interpret, it sounds like what you're saying is pharmacy is clearly included in the definition, and you interpret the
interpret
task force
retail pharmacy. That's right.
Yeah,
yep.
To be inclusive of that.
And that we believe it's desirable to do so.
Yeah. Something like that. Does that make sense, Arian?
Yes.
Okay. These updates and recommendation number 10. I'll give everyone, I think we've considered that to death. Those in favour of making these amendments, please say aye.
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 I can feel the ayes getting more weary.
Exactly. They certainly are.
Those against, please say nay. Any abstentions? Passed. Okay, let's move on. There's minor markup to recommendation 12, just to remove the term involvement and just make it access, exchange, or use. Okay. That's a minor markup. I'm not going to put that to vote unless everyone fancies voting, which I don't think you do. Okay, the next. All these that are highlighted in green are ones which we've already been approved and gone through high tech. The next major one to talk about is recommendation 33, which I know you're all going to know and love, which is around basic access and value-added access for fees, etc. Arian, you had sent through some additional markup to this. Could you possibly talk us through that, and I'll add it into this document?
Sure. Is this the one that I marked up? Hold up. Let me just make sure I'm looking at the one that I marked up, because that would be useful.
Okay.
Okay. This is the one that I marked up. Great. I can't look at my own markup. All right. So I put basic access with two sub-bullets. Sub-bullet one is the raw data or raw facts about the patient or patients, the legal medical record or designated record set. I made it clear that our reference to patient-specific costing or pricing data used for decision-making is as defined by the designated record set, which already includes patient-specific costing or pricing data. So we're not asserting a new add to that. There was a concern raised during the HITACH meeting that as an industry, we don't yet know how to provide a prospective true patient cost, and it was important not to will it so by means of a definition, which is why this bullet is really referring to the raw data or raw facts. Those raw data or raw facts could be used in the process of driving pricing transparency, and it would be desirable to do so. But it's the intent here is not, as I said, to will into existence a mechanism for doing so that doesn't exist. And then sub-bullet two is transformation of data required to implement standards, so I didn't change any of this. Value-added access, exchange and use, which includes any transformation, alteration, calculation, interpretation, transportation, et cetera, over and above that necessary to implement standards. I didn't change any of the sub-bullet there. So really, we're clarifying the distinction between basic access and value-added access. We're clarifying what's definitional under basic access, and basic access will be a term we'll be applying the pricing recommendations. And I will pause at and value-added access, which is pretty much anything else, and I will pause to make sure that this is understandable. I think we had some struggles in the HIT Advisory Committee with people just understanding what it was we're actually talking about.
Yeah, and you also see me struggling with capturing all this and bullet points, etc. Okay, I'm getting there. Can you just talk us through RAW, please?
Yeah, there are a whole bunch of terms that mean relatively the same thing. So I think, Andy, you've talked about source data. I intend the term raw data or raw facts as being basically the set of natural facts that, per Supreme Court decision, is not can't have IPR associated with it. So, you know, a fact is the weather is 60 degrees and partly cloudy today. You can't patent or copyright the temperature observation. In many cases, patient data, we have a whole set of observations that are either covered by the designated record set or are raw data or raw facts. And if there's a better term for raw data, raw facts, happy to consider it, but it really is, you know, the blood pressure reading is X.
Okay. What's a good way of us capturing that?
Are you contemplating that genomic data about an individual fits into that? Raw data, raw facts?
Yeah. It, as part of the designated record set if it's used for decision making. But there are, this is an area where there may well be other applicable law. So my understanding, not a HIPAA lawyer, but have read the regs a bunch of times and talked with many lawyers, is that the designated record set is intended to encompass everything used for decision-making about a patient by a covered entity, and that as you have patient-specific information that's used for decision-making, it becomes part of the designated record set. So, yes, absolutely, in that case. But again, it might be covered by other relevant law.
I must say, I am still struggling with the term raw. But, Arian.
Yeah, I'm happy to consider, contemplate, whatever, any other, if anybody has a better term.
Anybody?
I think the designated record set's actually a great term, but I don't think anybody understands what it is who's not a HIPAA lawyer or deeply immersed in this.
Well, I think I heard Anil just say designated record set was good, but very faint.
No, that wasn't me. That wasn't me.
That was
Nick.
Yeah, I mean, the designated record set to us means something specific, so I like the use of that. I mean, I agree that maybe other people who are not covered entities don't know what it is. So I like the way it's framed right now.
It's almost like we just say that.
Yeah, but the problem is, and the reason that I expand the definition is, it does new records that has a meaning. It, with respect to covered entities, it doesn't have a meeting with respect to HINs or HIEs. You could say information that is or would be. You could say information that is or would be included in the designated record set.
Yeah.
So, Arian, this is Morris. Just a clarified designated record set. It's generally under the privacy rule, just a group of records maintained by or for a covered entity. Just to clarify.
Ah, so it's not explicit in what the content is.
It is. I was just scoping it out for you.
It has, as I said, it has a meaning with respect to covered entities, but doesn't have a meaning more broadly.
Sorry, whoever's speaking, you are very, very, very faint.
It's John, and I'm much louder now.
Oh, yeah, that's better. Yeah.
I'm beginning to. I understand the nuance with designated record set is it doesn't define a specific set of data like USCDI would, because designated record sets are in the eye of the covered entity. So
they're not in the eye of the covered entity. So designated record set means a group of records maintained by or for a covered entity, that is, the medical records and billing records about an individual maintained by or for a covered health care provider, the enrollment, payment, claims adjudication, and case or medical management record systems maintained by or for a health plan, or subpart 3, used in whole or in part by or for the covered entity to make decisions about individuals.
Yes, but Barry, I think that's an extremely helpful definition, but what I'm saying is when the covered entity applies that, it ends up being different specific sets of data. It's to your point that it doesn't mean anything when you apply it to an HIE or HIN, because it's I see where we're going. So you're saying it's an accepted industry definition, and we could say apply it to your circumstances.
Yep. The other way of doing this is to use the term record as defined in designated record sets. The term record means any item, collection, or grouping of information that includes protected health information is maintained, collected, used, or disseminated by or for a covered entity.
The problem is that if you're not a covered entity, then...
I know, and I understand. That's the reason to use a broader set of definitions, because covered entities have meetings only in context of a covered entity. Sorry, designated record set only has meetings in context of a covered entity. You know, the simplest way to address this is to, rather than try to define it, we just punt all the hard work to our friends at ONC and say, you know, we think there should be a distinction between basic access and value-added access. And basic access would include such things as objective observations, items that are covered or through health, you know, et cetera, that are part of the designated record set for covered entities, or similar items that are processed or managed through an HIE. But really use that as a subtext and say, look, we just think that ONC should make a distinction between basic access that has higher protections associated with it and value-added access to which market rates are determined, and give some helpful placeholders for how to define this term. Because ultimately, ONC is going to have to find an operational definition for what it is that we intend, and we could do all the work, or we can make ONC do all the hard work.
Well, so, Arian, this is Mark. Just so I understand, given that I'm going to be one of those people that would be working through all this, are you essentially what you're saying is that you want the designated record set without the clarifying language about fire for a covered entity. Isn't that essentially what you're saying?
I think that's right. But I think the higher point, regardless of the definition, is that the task force, and I believe the committee, believes that there should be a distinction between value-added services and basic access.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm just trying to understand, because, you know, at the core of what you're saying is it's really important to understand what basic access means.
Refers to, exactly. Yep. I think the designated record set definition gives you everything you need, except for the limitations of.
I would suggest if the group agrees with that, I would suggest explicitly putting that into your recommendation, like as the definition, then, or at least like noting that in some clear way.
So, Arian, I've been playing about with drafting as we've been talking. It seems to be that if you're a covered entity, we mean the designated record set, right?
That's right.
Okay, so that's what I've said, that first statement in there. If you're not considered a covered entity, what do we think it should be?
It is the data that... I need to go through all my tabs to get back. It's the data, so if we're not a provider, if we are a health developer of health information technology, an HIE or an HIN, right?
Yep.
And if it's a payer, then we already have a good definition.
Yep.
We're okay there. Pharmacies are covered entities if they transact for Part D. So if the entity is not a covered entity, then let's just apply the definition without the restriction of covered entity.
And that's the definition you gave us previously, yep. But that's got the term raw in it.
It does not have the term raw in it. So the definition of covered entity, I'm saying we suggest applying, or ONC might consider applying 164.501, whatever the hell this is.
Okay, so someone help me on the drafting. Can you see the screen? I'm trying to just draw this out separately.
So, Arian, this is Morris again. Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Which is part of the definition of designated record set. For non, if we I just need some clarification here. It's regarding part of that definition is making decisions about the individual. So are you suggesting that non-covered entities will have the ability to make decisions about the individual? I mean, I'm just trying to see how it all fits in. I'm just asking.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, it is a great question, and this really applies to HIEs or HINs that aren't right. making decisions, aren't acting as covered entities.
Right.
But all the data that they have is either by definition value-added services or effectively copies of the data that come from the covered entities, and this is really intended to cover the copies of the data that come from the covered entities.
I think if you add some color to that, I think that would be really helpful considering Mark and I will be looking at these recommendations.
Yeah.
Okay. Given what we've got on screen right now, guide me on how you want to update this.
Again, I have to get back to my... So I would say the task force recommends that ONC distinguish between basic access and value-added access exchange and use. The task force suggests that ONC... Yeah.
Is it basic access or is it access to basic data and access to value-added data?
Well, it's access to basic data, and the use and exchange are generally value-added services unless they're essential in our definition for the functioning of the certified health information technology. So getting the data to SureScripts, you can't have an e-prescribing module if you can't get the data to SureScripts. But general transport, I'm gonna help you get the record from point A to point B. I'm gonna help you get a lab record from the lab to someplace else. Generally is not part of providing basic access. And particularly a lot of use is value added. Capability.
We have a helpful public comment that we may want to consider here.
I'm sorry?
I said there's a helpful public comment that has been submitted.
Okay, I can't see those. Can somebody read them?
It says the proposed definition of basic access would seem to include clinical notes, since they are not facts. That doesn't seem consistent with the basic goals of the rule.
Yeah.
Notes are part of the designated record set.
Yes.
It's the decision making. Why have the raw clause at all?
Well, I think that's where we're going right now. So
yep.
Thank you, public commenter. So, and then I'd say if an entity is not a covered entity, the data is not considered a covered entity, but is making clinical decision making, the same definition without restriction to covered entities. And if the entity is a HIE or HIN, then we're talking about the data that was collected from or managed on behalf of the covered entity, the designated record set information that was collected from and managed on behalf of the covered entity.
Okay, so and what was the other one?
Yeah, so we've got we've got three domains of potential
basic
actors. Or four domains of potential actors. We've got providers, and providers are either covered entities or they are covered entity-like. And so in the case where they're not covered entities because they don't do HIPAA transactions, then we just want to apply, for purposes of information blocking, the designated record set definition to them. And then we've got the cases of developer of health information technology, health information exchange, and health information network. And in those cases, what we're talking about is the data managed by or collected from the provider or other covered or other actors that is or would fall within the definition of covered entity as broadly defined. Sorry, designated record set is broadly defined.
Where's designated record set and a covered entity properly defined? What CFR?
Yeah,
which CFR?
CFR is, I have to go to my
45,
other tab.
45 CFR. Sorry.
45 CFR 164.501.
Happy, Morris?
And I think Claudia would be pleased.
Thanks for clarifying.
That definition includes billing records, enrollment payment claims adjudication records.
You mean Cynthia?
Cynthia would be. Sorry.
Claudia's probably pleased as well, but yeah. Okay, so we've got covered entities, which includes payers and providers. Okay. If you're a provider actor that's not a covered entity, the designated record set. We've got HIE and HIN. What do we do with HIT developers? I don't think we have that issue, do we? Because they're mocked up inside here, the last point.
Yes, I'd say it's under bullet three. If an entity is considered HIE, HIN, or developer of health information technology, the information is collected on behalf of a covered entity or other. And then the information is collected on behalf of a covered entity or non-covered entity provider.
Okay. It's not just provider; it's just covered entity or non-covered entity.
Well, we don't want to limit to provider, because we also want to include payers with the HIE connecting payers.
Exactly. Yep. Then basic transformation of data required to implement standards. I'm not keen on the term basic here, because we've got in the markup we've got complex here. But I think that might be something for ONC to wade through.
Just a note that we got another public comment that said, might a simpler proposal for basic access be retrieving existing data or a representational transformation of existing data?
I think the term representing transformation could be tricky. Is that syntactical, semantic, or both? Notwithstanding all sorts of goodness that comes out of USCDI, like contextualization, etc. Part of me is wondering whether we should be hanging this around USCDI definitions as opposed to.
There are many people who would be happy if we hung it around USCDI definitions.
I like that. I like that concept.
But it's
like everybody else out
there.
Broad.
The problem with hanging it on USCDI is it's not yet sufficiently broad, and it's going to take us years to get there.
Yeah, this is the conundrum that we're in, is that the law required access to all information USCDI is not all information. It doesn't include multiple data classes that I think multiple actors want to make sure get included.
Right, so I think hanging it on designated record set is the best compromise we have for now.
Well, I'm making this note here. Do we note that the emerging definition of USCDI may provide a useful way of constraining basic and value added access in the future?
Yep.
Okay.
That's fair.
Andy, this is just a reminder, we've got public comment in 6 minutes.
Yep. Thank you, sir.
And I would encourage Daniel Carnese to speak up verbally when the public comment session begins.
I just want to comment internally that when we're going through these deliberations, and it's really freakishly hard, that we have sympathy for our ONC colleagues.
Don't tell them that.
We encourage all the sympathy.
Okay.
I concur on that one.
Yeah. Plus, the reality is, it's rare that people will get that mad at us, and everybody in the world gets mad at our federal.
We just have to try harder. Okay. Task force. I'm just going to put this markup, which we've gone through fairly exhaustively now. I know we've all been thinking about it, so I'm happy to just quickly put this to a quick roll call vote. Those in favor of the markup as it's currently sitting, please say aye.
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 Thank you. Those against, please say nay. Those abstaining, please say abstain. Okay, thank you very much. Let's try and move through any other. There really wasn't many other changes. Formatting. Oh, we removed recommendation 48 because it was duplicative. It was just around our thoughts around TEF.
Yeah, that was the one, just for everyone's clarification, that there was a request for information in the assurances condition of certification regarding the trusted exchange framework and common agreement, and the recommendation was very similar to the other recommendation in the exceptions section.
It was identical, so we removed it.
Yeah.
Recommendation 52, here is the markup which failed to get into what we put in front of HITAC, and we promised Raj faithfully we would get his sentiments in here, and we thought we had already. So here's the markup around fair use around screenshots. We just said, with the understanding that any actor disclosing the screenshots is responsible for communicating that each use is to be put to fair use, as opposed to ensuring that each use is to be put to fair use. Has anyone got any concerns over that markup? Okay, great.
No.
I'm not going to put that to the vote because I think we've already voted on that. It's already an improved recommendation. I just want to make sure that we reflected things correctly. Okay, and I think that might be it. In which case, we can go to public comment right now.
Well, Andy, before we open up to public comment, we could do it after public comment also. Do you want to just kind of recap kind of what our plan is between now and Wednesday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll do that after public comment.
Okay.
Thanks, Andy. Operator, can we open the line?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Our first comment comes from Daniel Carnese with Patient Precision. Please proceed with your comment.
Good morning, everyone. I appreciate the effort that you all are going through to try to get these definitions. I think the last thing was really kind of really probably the most important of all of the topics. I think the idea of having basic information be, strictly speaking, a syntactic transformation of the conclusions that have already been made, I think that really gets at the intention of what you're going for. I mean, what we don't want is to have a situation where there is a value-added service, but whether it's a person or a value-added comes from a person or software, that this information access is supposed to mandate triggering. So if we say that, just for example, if you have a decision, an advanced AI-based service, that is doing something more than providing a representational transformation, a syntactic transformation of the information there. That's what we want to be value added. But if an AI program has already made a conclusion, it's already been paid for one way or another, just as a doctor's conclusion has been paid for, then I think it makes sense that once that information has been explicitly inferred, put in the record, that should be part of basic access, because it wouldn't be right to have to pay multiple times for the same inference, whether it's from a person or from software.
Thank you very much, that's very helpful. Have we got any other comments?
There are no further comments at this time.
Okay, so let's discuss that inside the task force. Team, would anybody object to actually in capturing in that definition we have a basic access, where we talk about basic transformation of data, to actually say basic syntactic transformation of data?
I think that's reasonable.
Arian?
All basic syntactic transformation of data?
Yeah.
So any work that I do to map, for example, so the conclusion of that is that any work that I do to map, for example...
Semantic, basically.
Well, yeah. So it turns out to be kind of hard to map from, let's say, you know, I've got a service right now that maps from NCPDP B1 claims into 837 claims. Now, the service does other stuff, but that mapping of NCPDP B1 to 837 is a valuable service that would be deemed a basic service and deemed to be available at no cost if we go with that approach.
Basic syntactic mapping, but not semantic. So let's say I've got a lab interface that has some localized lab terminology being used. The actual syntactic mapping of those that lab interface to LOINC would be included in BASIC, but the semantic terminology translations would be value add.
Well, so what I'm talking about is it's. I don't think that distinction drives the distinction of basic and value added. I don't believe that all syntactic transformations are basic. The way that we intended to cover this is via the subpart relative to the transformations that are required to make it available via standards. So that if I maintain my own private medication terminology or use one of the public, you know, use one of the standard medication terminology vendors, and I transact with for e-prescribing, that the transformations required to express Rx norm and NDC codes need to be included as part of the definition of basic access. But not all standards and all transformations. The standards and transformations required to make the certified information technology work.
Yeah, but there's some syntax and semantic. Some syntactical
transformations are simple and some are complex. Some semantic translations are simple and some are complex. So it's probably not fair to say that all syntactical are basic and all semantic are value add.
Exactly.
Daniel, do you have any additional comment on that?
Well, I think he's typing. He said, is there a reason to include basic? No, I think you covered it.
Okay.
He just typed.
Okay, so basic is important because basic and value add are the two categories by which we're saying fees should be considered. And if you're basic, then it's basically a cost approach. Whereas the value added, then it's more of a market rate driven approach. So
yeah, I think he said you covered it. I think he's good with it based on the chat.
Well, we haven't made a decision yet. We're still working it out.
Okay.
And right now in our drafting, we kind of haven't got this nuance, and I'm not sure how we can reflect the nuance because it is somewhat subjective around what is simple and what is complicated.
Yeah, I think the way that I intended to address this is to say, I don't care how simple or complex it is, if you have certified health information technology that's been certified to or a health information network or health information exchange that's been certified to standards, then it's on you to implement those transformations. That's not an extra cost that you can charge.
But to our points we were making earlier, we might not have certified health IT.
Say that again.
To the points we were making earlier, we might not have certified health IT. It might be health IT, but it might not be certified.
Right, and I think our definition contemplates back to our definition. I think our definition is accommodating that. Let me go to my copy of it.
Yeah, but it means we can't rely on the fact that it will be certified health IT and therefore complying.
No. So our definition right now says transformation data required to implement standards. In parentheses, from the core standards list, close parentheses, reasonably required to enable exchange or implement the intended use of a certified technology.
You've got an example.
We've
updated based upon Daniel's comment right now. So it says basic syntactic transformation of data required.
Yeah, I think we should remove that.
Okay. What do others think on the task force?
Not really sure what I'm saying here, but listening to the conversation about syntactical versus semantic, introducing either of those terms seems to be troublesome.
So keeping it to basic, which is inclusive, and complex for value add. And then I'm sure Mark and Morris are going to ask us further questions in the future to help them define those out.
Right, but in the end, we're making a recommendation to ONC. I mean, the more clarification we provide up front, perhaps the less work they have to do, but in the end, they have to get this right, and it'll go out for public comment, and we'll have another crack at it.
It will not go out to public comment.
Okay.
No?
I think we leave it as it is. I think it's going to come back round to us for further to help ONC with this definition and this whole section.
Yeah, the typical process is NPRM to final rule. The only path where there'd be additional public comment is if they release it as an IFR.
Yeah, so just to clarify from ONC, that's right. So we have the public comment period now. It's been extended. But then once we receive those comments, we review them, assess them, and then update and make the final rule.
Magic. Okay. Task Force, thank you very much for your contributions over the last few weeks and months. It has been a thoroughly enjoyable, sometimes frustrating for us all, but I think we've actually come back to a series of recommendations which are seeking and really in line with what Cures is looking to achieve, and will have demonstrable improvements for patients, for those who are, to use our own terms, for those purchasers and payers around their care, and actually for all the participants in the healthcare ecosystem. Has anybody on the task force got any closing comments as we sign off?
No, you're here.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, and this
thank
is Mark.
You so much.
From ONC, I just want to say from our perspective, ONC, you know, the amount of work you all put into this and the quality of the recommendations is really much appreciated. And on a personal level, I've enjoyed talking to you all very frequently over the last couple of months. So thank you. And as far as timing goes, Andy and Michael and I are going to work on updating the transmittal letter and hopefully get it out soon so folks, you know, the high tech can review it prior to the votes on Wednesday. So thanks, everyone.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Steve. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.